listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
The most, Nikki Kourula. We're going to jump right into this episode with one of my favorite people on the planet, Mr. Brent Paschke. How are you, Brent?
What up, Nikki? I'm doing good, man. I'm freaking just love to be hanging with you, bro.
Likewise. We're in the middle of a story. We were talking about new gear. Tell us. Tell me about that, Martin. Let's finish the story.
Yeah. So one of my best friends, Carl, picked it up, and he's been so gracious to let me use this nice 1934 017 golden era. Oh my god, incredible. Just incredible.
Yeah, I had a family friend, I used to sing with his kids, and he said, hey, my brother passed away and left me all these guitars. I should send you some of the pictures of the guitars. And he said, I just want to sell them or get them appraised. He said, I've taken some to McCabe, some they gave me like a ballpark. One of them I was in the market for. It was a Dobro. I was like, oh, do you have any resonators? He's like, I have a Dobro. And I said, oh, amazing. How old is it? He's like, it's 19 from 1936.
No way.
I'm going to show it to you. This is how much you're going to appreciate this.
Dude, so, what's nice, too, is some of those ones, like, you can get them at a decent price still. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Dude, come on.
It's so
come on.
It is really, and I actually put a pickup in it, and dude, she plays so badass. And
bro,
crazy thing is, it's the same one. I didn't know this searching, but it's the same one Clapton has. One, and I saw him play it in a live performance because I was looking for some performances of him playing, and this is my latest purchase, but. He said, yeah, come by and check it out. I think you'll like it. He's like, it's in great condition. And he's like, it's 90 years old. And I said, let me come look. And I was going to just buy like a $500 resonator. And
yeah,
like, you know, I'll sell this to you for $1,000. I'm like, I'll do it like that.
Bro. And you got it the rest of your life.
Yes.
Got it the rest of your life.
And it's kind of crazy because it's like, you know, I'm not a slide guitarist, but it's like making me want to learn how to play slide.
Yeah.
Like, but just like changes, it makes you pivot. You know how all guitars make you pivot a little bit.
Yeah.
Start playing different things on it. It pulls different things out of you. So imagine what that old Martin does. And it is the best acoustic neck you play it on.
Oh God, it's so ridiculous. It's so beautiful. It's just like you pick it up and it's like, oh my God. The guy, it's like one of those vintage shops I got it from, and I knew I was in trouble because it's one of those you gotta call and make an appointment. So I know everything in there is just ridiculous. And then he says, This is a guitar that I'm deciding to sell because I'm getting another one similar. So I thought I'd let it go. It's been at my house for 7 years because I like it. And you're like, oh God. You know, I know. If you want to play and you pick it up, it's like, oh my, it's crazy. Something about, man, there's something about, I feel like that old wood, like, and when it dries out for that many years and it learns it's not a tree anymore, like, you know what I mean? Like
something about it. And the
great, whatever it is,
sound, it's like it feels like an old glove that you just feel like, oh, this is just melting onto my hand in all the right ways. And then you play it and you listen to it and it's like, oh my God, you just cannot put a price on something that's old like that. It just,
yeah.
You know, with old Strats, you said you had Kiko lent you an old.
I got, Strat. Yeah.
I'm sure the neck is worn and the frets are worn. Tell me what that guitar feels like.
Bro, it's incredible. It's like one of my best friends. Again, this is Kiko, one of my best friends. And he's, you know, he had an opportunity to get this 56 Strat and from Eric Johnson. Eric Johnson was selling it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so he calls me one day. He's like, hey, man, you know, I saw Eric Johnson selling a 56 Strat on his website, and it was market price. It wasn't marked up because it was Eric's, and he actually played it on the G3 tour, wow. And he recorded the live album with it, and there's a video of, so you can like go in and see this Eric Johnson playing this guitar the whole show. So Kiko calls me and I'm like, and tells me this, and I'm like, my God, I don't know how you could find a better Strat. Like, I mean, this is one that Eric picked out and played, and like, you know,
why he was selling it, like probably like I want
Eric Johnson, I think he's like 70 now or something, and he is dealing with some hand stuff, you know. So this one has just a slightly bigger neck for a 50s, you know. This is a 56. I have a 57 Telecaster, and it's a similar neck in that it's this subtle V, just like the 56 here, but it is definitely smaller. Like my 57 is a small neck, you know? So I think my gut is, it's not like I've played a lot of guitars around that age, you know, but I think that that era, the necks were maybe a little smaller at times, you know?
The scale of the frets were smaller, or the scale of the necks, or both?
The neck, just getting around the roundness of it. So I think where that, maybe what I'm guessing for Eric is probably just that V shape pushes him out a little bit too much, maybe. And he, you know, and I mean, that's like one of the greatest guitarists in the world, you know, and he's got to be dialed with how he plays, you know. So
I'm sure it's like, why struggle to play something when you can pick up another one and just. I mean, so with ease.
Yeah. You know, and if you're, you know, I'm sure he's ultra connected. He can go, hey, I'm looking for, and I'm sure he gets, you know, he can put the word out. So
I don't know. Yeah. If I've ever sell a guitar. I just love my guitar so much.
Yeah.
Do it. I just don't think I could do it.
Yeah. I don't really. I agree with you, man. Like I'm pretty particular on that. I'm not a hoarder, a guitar hoarder. I definitely have like, I want this, I'm looking for, you know what I mean? And then I just find the one, you know, that's kind of that Les Paul is a great example of that on the wall there. It's just like, I want a nice, you know, my forever Les Paul kind of thing. And I just go out and find it. And then I don't ever feel like I need to have, you know, I don't need to have 10 Les Pauls. I don't need to have 10 Strats. You know what I mean? There's a few varieties of them, but I'm kind of like, my motto has always, I like the foundation. I like to get, I've always felt this. It's like, if I can get that, the right amp and the right guitar that are just great, like everything sounds good, guitar to amp. My mindset was always like, well, then I can just, then everything's fine. And all the frequencies are there. I can use pedals to do whatever I want from there. You know, I don't want to use pedals to fix things or to, you know.
Yep.
So that's kind of always been my mentality. And it's weird, man, because I do a lot of session work, you know, and I don't have a big stable of guitars, you know, I just don't. But, you know, then I think about it and you like a lot of the players that I love, I don't associate them with a bunch of different guitars, you know, like
they have two or three.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, and they may have more, but they play two or three and it's usually one.
It's the SRV number one, you know, like, and I know he, I'm sure he had a big collection. That's, you know, I'm sure at some point, you know, but you just associate him. He's like, that was the one. And you can go back and see him in those club gigs, you know, on that same guitar, beating on it on it, you know, an amp and stuff. Like,
true. Well, it's like, you know, guitar connects to you. Just feels like, oh, this just always feels right. I've been feeling that with my Silver Sky. And man, I don't know what it is. It's just like, I pick up other guitars and I always love them. I'm like, oh my God, why don't I play this more? And then I come back to that and it just feels good all the time. It just feels good. It just feels, he did something with the shape and the weight of the guitar. And I think it's three, shape of the guitar, the weight of the guitar and the pickups. All three of those things just make it do what I want it to do. You know what I mean? So when you find that, it's just hard to shake it, you know?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I have a few, like, you know, like my, I have my 64. I bought a 64 Strat 99. I was right after we got a record deal with Spy Mob. And, you know, like $3,600, like, you know what I mean? Like, God, I know I tell people that and they're like, come on.
Crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. And, yeah, but that's the one. I have a lot of guitars here at the studio, of course, but I have, you know, now I have the 56 here. I have my 76 Strat. I have my 64 at home. And same thing. It's just like every time, the two guitars, every time I pick up my 57 Tele or my 64 Strat, but I also put a lot of years on those guitars. You know, I was touring, as crazy as this was, I was touring around the world with my 57 Strat in the early Pharrell, you know, the NERD days, and with the 64, with the 57 Tele and the 64 Strat. And then one gig, they almost got stolen.
Oh my.
And that's, yeah. Ow. So I was like, yeah, somebody caught, you know, somebody, there was somebody backstage, like trying to get to the guitars, just like it, they were like kind of caught in the act.
Wow.
Yeah, so after that, I was like, it's not that, like, of course, like, you know, you could replace a 64, you can replace those, right? But
same.
I don't want to go through the search. I don't want to question, oh, is it, you know what I mean? So I kept the 64, and it records so well. The Tele records so well, you know. So now the last tour I went on, when I went on, like, you know, Dear Girl tour with Pharrell in 2015, then I decided, I was like, well, I'm going to just go and get a 70s Strat. And I just went and searched around. I'm kind of so particular. I go around all kinds of places. I played a lot of custom shops. This was early, mid 2000s, right? I'm going to just get a custom shop to replace it. And then I was at a store and I'm like, well, let me just try that 70s right there. And I picked it up after playing like 50 custom shops. Right. And I hit one note and I was like, I looked at the guy and I was like, this is what a Strat's supposed to sound like. Like, why? Like, I don't get it. Like, yeah. But that, like, yeah, in the 70s, like the 70s Strats, it's a little, man, it is really a pain in the butt at times, because it's just like, it's, you know, they're not made as well, but they sound, if you get the right one, they sound really good.
Yeah.
Like they have a sound like that's really nice.
Consistent, but it's like you can pick up one and it speaks to you. And I feel like guitars, they instantly speak to me right away. And then like I do something kind of foolish. I go home and I say, if I can't stop thinking about this guitar all night, I'm going to come back tomorrow and get it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't need another guitar. If I like convince myself, nah, I'm good. But if I'm like tossing and turning, thinking about that guitar, I go back the next day and I'm like racing there for it. And usually things that I really want are like that. It's like,
yeah,
I just bought a Martin 0028. Was not in the market.
Oh.
Was not looking for a guitar, was actually looking for maybe a parlor guitar or the Clapton.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I played like 10 Claptons and never loved them. Never loved them. And then I picked one up and I was like, oh, this one's great. I actually really dig it. Tried to buy it and the guy had said, oh, I sold it. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I went to just look at some, you know, guitars and put to get I got a Henrik's Flying V and I wanted to get it set up. So my guitar tech worked.
Nice.
Which are great. So I'm like just noodling in the guitar room. I pick up an $8,000 guitar. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Pick up a $6,000 guitar. I'm like, oh, this is cool. They didn't speak to me. I pick up the 00028 and I was just in love right away. I was like, oh my God. And my friend was like, dude, you're the first one to play that guitar. He said, we literally just put that on the wall today.
No way.
Nobody's played it. And I said, all right, I don't need to spend $3,500 on this guitar right now. I'm like, let me put it away. And I'm like, I'm thinking about it. I'll come back tomorrow. And dude, literally, I was like tossing and turning. I was like, it was having night sweats. Like, oh my God. And so I came back the next day. And he's like, man, nobody touched that guitar. And I was like, I'm coming in to buy it. So just take it. Like,
yeah.
Put it in the box. I'm walking out with it. And it's one of my favorite acoustic guitars now. It's like I play it all the time.
Yep.
Feel something. So like there's something about, I feel like a guitar unlocks something in you. You know what I mean?
It just does.
There's something that it connects to you for a different reason than any other instrument because it unlocks something in you and you can feel that right away. So
yeah,
hard. It's hard to.
Yeah, I agree. And do you have those, like, I have the ones that got away.
Yes.
Thing. Oh, and now I've learned from that. I have learned from that because I don't buy a lot of gear, but I have learned, like, and this is what got me about the Martin, and I'm happy. So Carl got it, you know. He's been looking for some guitars and then just let me use it, you know. But it was one of those. So I was so thankful because, like, it was like I've gotten to this point in my life where I'm like, I wouldn't have. I told Kiko this because we went there together, and Kiko and Carl, and I told the Kiko, I was like, I know I'm just going to think about that guitar, and I'm going to have to find, because, like, when I start thinking about a guitar, it might be years until I find it. You know, I'm just kind of thinking, I've been thinking about a mid 60s deluxe reverb for, you know, 2 years now. I haven't got it yet, but it'll happen, you know, like, and when the right one comes, you know, or when I steal that one from Lon.
You know what's something funny?
So you've used that one, right?
I've used that one. And I also went and played, a 64 Vibraverb, and it's the best.
Yes.
And
oh no, the one at Lawns, right? The one at Lawns. Yeah. No, dude, I told you, I have a feeling that that's the exact amp that they used on Get Lucky.
Oh, really?
Yes, I had that amp. I rented that amp.
Wow.
And yeah, and I plugged into it. And I played it, and I called the guys from Lawn, and I said, "Hey, do you guys have the history on this app, the rental history?" And they didn't, but I said, because I know that Daft, I know they recorded, you know, Random Access a few different places, but Conway was where they recorded a lot of it.
Right.
I'm not sure if. If they did, they probably did the live recording. I'm not really sure where, but I think if they did the live recording in LA, I would bet money that that was the amp.
Well,
I'm telling you, I
asked my buddy Travis, who you've probably met a couple times, and he said, "Man, ask them if they'll sell it to me." And he said, "Okay." He's like, "I don't know if it's gonna happen." I said, "Dude, just ask, because it's one of the nicest Vibraverbs I've played." And they said, "Absolutely not," and they said they make so much money from the one person that rents it. The one person that rents it every time. Can you guess what famous guitarist would rent that guitar? And it's I don't would think it's him. But
the Vibroverb?
Vibroverb.
I don't know. I can't guess.
Guess anybody. Just guess any guitarist that you think.
Who would come in and rent it? Mayer.
Okay, that was a good guess. Jack White is the guy that rents the Vibra, and he has his own guitars. I'm like, and amps. I'm like,
that's right. No, dude, that might be one of the reasons I got it because, okay, I got a Pharrell song in for a session, and right. I pulled it up and like, I was like, immediately, I was like, I know exactly the tone I got to get. I need that sound, the same kind of tone that, the guitarist, I can't remember his name. He's so great. He played Going the Distance from Cake. Da 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 da. I was like, oh, dude, I need that sound. Started looking it up. So I just started researching Silvertone. It's an old Silvertone app, right? Hit up Lon. Hey, guys, need a Silvertone. You got one in there? Yep, we got the one. We got Jack White's favorite amp that he rents, and that's right. I think they did say he also rents this, and I was like, we'll send both of them. Like, I gotta have them if they're
have a great collection. They just have a great collection of amps.
They got
and it's like they know when people like them, they're using them, and they probably do sell some gear, but they don't sell a lot of it because they just know people want them to rent that. You know what I mean?
So yeah,
how it is. Let's talk about Spy Mob. We can talk guitars and amps.
I know, right?
And we haven't talked about Outback Story yet, so it could just derail.
Oh, man.
We're in a band called Spy Mob.
Yes.
You ended up becoming one of Pharrell's favorite bands. You were on the
school.
Pharrell asked you to join his band, and he was currently just the two, just he and Chad as the Neptunes, correct?
Well, not join. We played the instruments on In Search Of, on the first NERD album. Yeah, but the band NERD is...
NERD is Spy Mob and the Neptunes, right?
No. NERD is Pharrell, Chad, and Shay.
Okay.
And we were the band that came in at the very beginning on the first album, In Search Of, and then we played all the live instruments.
Amazing.
So, and that was in, I think we recorded that in 2000, and then I think that album came out in 2001 or two. God, I should have these down now, but.
It was 2001. And that was the time. So, but he took you guys on the road. So was it considered like you guys are a band and it's those three guys kind of running it?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. No. It was still considered, you know, that's Pharrell, Chad, and Shay's vision, NERD, you know, and those guys go way back, you know, into like high school and stuff. And so the way that all happened is we were shopping around for record deals. And then we had this 6-song EP, which is like up on Spotify and all the DSPs right now. So we made this 6-song EP and we were shopping it around to all the record labels and publishers and whatnot. And we were getting a lot of attention. So it went to a lot of different places. At the same time, we didn't know this, but at the same time, Pharrell and Chad were shopping for a place to start their record label, Star Track.
Right.
And in that whole time, in them shopping around, they met somebody who I should find out who it was and thank them immensely for this, but they met somebody and somebody said, hey, this, you might like this band if you like kind of like the Steely Dan and Rundgren and, you know, pop, you know, 70s stuff.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and so he gave Chad and Pharrell the CD. And then it came to in a meeting, it was kind of crazy. It came to in a meeting at Epic Records, which we had just, so fast forwarding, we had signed to Epic Records. We didn't know all this was going on. We didn't know they had the CD. They were listening to it in Virginia.
Wow.
We got signed to Epic Records. We made a record, an album, but then we got dropped. I don't know how long afterwards, but we got dropped. Album's made, done, ready to go out and everything. And we're like, heartbroken, like, my God, you know? It turns out that Pharrell and Chad shared the same lawyer that we did, this guy named Tim Mandelbaum. We had no idea about all this. Like, and Tim's taking Pharrell and Chad to all these meetings with record label CEOs, you know? And he goes to Epic Records with Chad and Pharrell, and he's like, and they get to the meeting with the president of the label, and Pharrell's like, hey, you have one of my favorite bands on your record label. And it was the CEO was like, or the president was like, hey, who is it? And Pharrell said, it's Spy Mob. And it's like, oh, well, we just let them go. And I think Pharrell said something like, oh, cool, I'll sign them or something like that. You know, so it's just like this crazy, like, wow, you know. So we get this call from our lawyer afterwards. Like, you know these guys called the Neptunes? They're really blowing up right now. You know, this is 2000, you know.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, they did these, you know, mentioned a few songs. We're like, oh, yeah, those are dope, you know. But we were in, like, more of the rock world, so we didn't really know.
Oh,
that right. World, you know, they had like, I think it was a big Usher hit at that time. I think Mystical hit. They were really blowing up, you know,
big in the huge in the
yep. Yeah. And so then, you know, we got in touch with them and they were like, hey, we got this album called In Search Of, and we'd love to have you guys come and play live instruments on it.
Wow.
So, but the album was done, you know, everything was done, and it was actually, In Search Of was released overseas at that time. It had already been released, but they pulled it and we put our live instruments on it and then got re-released.
That's a great, that's like one of the records. It just like, well, it's like, it's got new energy. It's got really cool arrangement. Yeah. Got like real instruments too. And then it's combined with some of the hip hop-y kind of like producer sound up with. It's just a really good marriage of styles and just vibe, you know?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. And that's all for El Chad and Shay, man. Like they, those guys, man, I know I listened to it the other day. Cause I mean, I've played those songs so many times and, but you know, I haven't, it's not like I sit down and listen to that album, you know, like all the time, but so it's, it goes a bit of time before I'd listen to it again. And I was like, man, like I forget how crazy good that writing and arranging was that Chad and Pharrell did on that record. It's just out of this world good. And so good.
No, like you're obviously in a downswing because you got dropped by the label and thinking, okay, this could be something. Or was it just like doing another session and not, you didn't think there was much of a trajectory from it, just from didn't know what was next, you know, basically.
No, honestly, for me, like it's kind of crazy, but because like it's weird. Like I almost feel like in some ways I manifested it, like thinking about this kind of thing so much, like it, not this particular situation, but I love funk. You know me, I'm like, my thing is I love rhythm playing. Like I love like locking in and funky grooves, and I love funk, you know, like I love playing funky stuff. So I had always felt like, I was hearing the hip hop, you know, it wasn't like in my, you know, we were more rock world kind of thing, but I was hearing it and thinking like, it's so freaking cool. Like some of the stuff I'm hearing, I'm like, this is so freaking cool. And there wasn't a lot of blending at that time. It was hard to blend. You like to blend live drums and program drums. It at that time was difficult. You could do it. It was like Beat Detective in Pro Tools. But like there's all these kind of parameters you have to watch out for. And specifically when working, I'll explain after this, when working with Pharrell and Chad with their programming, there's certain things you got to be really careful of. But I had always felt like it would be super fun to play, like to mash those worlds together. You know, I'd always felt, and I had told my brother like a couple years before, I think, he reminds me of this. I had told him, I said, my brother Kevin, I said, Kevin, I really think the one big thing that will happen is when the hip hop world and the rock world mixes. And there was kind of a little bit of it, like Linkin Park, the Roots were kind of doing a Linkin Park. There was just a little bit of it, not a lot. Right. To me, I was like, I was so freaking stoked. And plus, like I got, you know, they sent us the album and I'm listening to it and, you know, like without us on it, I'm listening to it. I'm like, these songs are unbelievable, like crazy and funky, and they're minimal, and they're like the first NERD record is very like riff oriented, you know, it's like it's so
edgy and it had like bite to it, but without like slapping you across the face. It was like subtle. That's what made like had edge and bite with, but it was like casual about how it was presenting it to you, you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's definitely like, you know, there's like Pharrell and Chad were using a lot of this clavinet sound that they distorted. It was like a clavinet in the O1W, which was one of their keyboards that they used at first. And they were like rock riffs. They were just like rock riffs, but they were very stylized in a Pharrell and Chad way. Right. You know, that's what's so interesting about Pharrell and Chad is they're really like good at like, not copying. They're really great at taking inspiration and then souping it up the way that they want to, you know, like they don't go like, we're going to copy that. They say, we're going to find this color. How could we add this color to our palette here? You know? And so that's what it felt like. And it was amazing. It was like absolutely amazing.
Of a song or a sound. And then
what was that, Nikki?
Like taking the ingredients of a song or a sound, and they were able to make a completely different dish that was like such a far, you know, distance from what it originally was inspired by, you know, it's like they were good.
100%. They're really good at that. And And Pharrell and Chad too, like, and it's fun. It was fun to go in there as a rock band, you know, right? Like, cause we like rock bands, like typically, right? Like not everybody, but like typically we'll kind of fine tune things a little more, you know, really like, right. And Pharrell and Chad were really like, man, it's the moment kind of like, and things are like much more looser. So that's why like In Search of You, listen to it. It just feels good, you know, or Pharrell tracks, a lot of young hip hop producers will ask, you know, they want to know the secrets. And it's like the thing I was going to say about the drums, it's like, they don't quantize a lot in general, you know? So, and you've heard me say that, you know, talk about P with that, you know, he's very feel oriented. So, so those, what's that, Nikki?
That's what makes it feels everything.
Yeah. And so, yeah, early 2000s, what was great about fun about the challenge was like, how do we retain Pharrell and Chad's? Normally, like some producers would go in there and straighten out Pharrell and Chad's drums. Like, bro, that's a complete no-no. That's an absolute no-no, you know? Because their stuff, when they program, it's swaggy. It's got their feel. So you can't change that. So it
plays drums, so like you hear his feel and you understand why the drums on his beats sound the way they do, because it just has that bag, you know.
Yeah, it's got a swag. So like in the early, I mean, you do it kind of the same way now. It was a little bit more complex then, but like it's really about like just finding a nice good size loop to match up with the program drum loops. But you're more so concerned about not moving where Pharrell and Chad's kick and snare are, especially.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can't move those. So then you got to just make sure everything kick and snare wise on the live drums are aligned, so you don't get the flamming or phase. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's kind of it. But that it was fun because this is such a challenge. You know, it's such a challenge to try to figure out how do we make this work.
Remember those early recording sessions, like, what was the direction? Like, did you guys play something and vibe, or was there like all of you were kind of throwing things in the hat, or were you kind of getting some direction and kind of steering the, you know, into the tracks?
Yeah, well, in typical Spy Mob form, of course, we prepared and tried to prepare as much as we could and, you know, tried parts and whatnot. But when we got in, it was very, so Chad and Pharrell were really, they were getting really busy at the time. And Chad was more in on us tracking everything at that time, you know. Pharrell was actually, I think, working with like Brandy or something during, you know, so there was like dual sessions going on with those guys. Pharrell was taking that world. And then we were with Chad and tracking everything. But, you know, Chad's a monster musician. I mean, he knows what he's doing, you know. I mean, I've walked in the room before and Chad's like, hey Brent, I've been working on this, I've been practicing this song, and he's playing Giant Steps. I'm like, bro, like
crazy,
you know. Yeah, and that's Chad. Like, Chad's crazy, you know. So Chad was in there with us, and Chad he did a lot of like, you know, hey, no, let's try it like this, let's try this, or, you know. But a lot of it with Pharrell and Chad, and I still do this, you know, I'm still working with Pharrell quite a bit. They hear things very complete. Right. Pharrell and Chad do. So there's already riffs there. I can, if I hear something, I can try it. You know what I mean? I'll add things, of course, here or there, like, oh, P, I heard this or that or whatever, you know. But typically those guys are very full formed on their songs. So, you know, like, Lap Dance, I, you know, that was da na da na da na, you know, I just replay it, you know, and then I go in and go, if I'm going to replay this, how do I make this as unique and interesting as possible, and work with what Chad and Pharrell and Shay are doing for NERD, which was in that case, I'm using weird sounds like the Fuzz Factory, which, you know, the ZVEX Fuzz Factory, which really kind of becomes the NERD guitar distorted sound.
Yeah, that became like what was on all the hit tracks. It's like,
yeah,
that was the sound. And it was also like huge kicks, huge,
yeah.
And that sound, that I would say those three things were the NERD sounds, and then everything around it is what also made it just sing and kind of have like swag, you know, like it just had,
yeah. Yep, and it's also in the balance too. Like, that was an interesting thing that this is something that I think Pharrell and Chad just intuitively did, which is like taking like, okay, so when you put like, you and I both know, we're like, we grew up so rock. Like I grew up listening like AC/DC and, you know, like those guitars are way out front. You know, they are. Like sometimes I listen back to those records and I'm like, damn, I don't know if the guitar's louder than the vocal, you know, like, but with.
Is most of, I wrestle with that on every record because like, you know, like there's a part of me, I'm like, I don't want this to sound like a guitar player mixed it. That's like my big thing. I don't want it to sound like a guitar player mixed it, like turn me up, like all the way. Like, so there's this fine balance. And then anytime I hear those old records, the guitars are so big and they're so badass. And they are louder than the vocals. And you're like, how is it sounding so perfect? It's like, perfectly balanced. So
But in the NERD world, you can't do that. You can't do that because it pushes it away from just the careful balance. It pushes it to rock, you know. So you have to pull it down. I had Dave Pinsato, the one of the greatest mixers out there. Dave one time sent me a NERD tune before he was mixing, before he sent it to Pharrell and Chad. And the first thing I told Dave, because Dave's a Southern rock guy. He loves guitars, you know. I was like, Dave, I know we both hear it, those guitars up, but you got to take them down. You're never going to get that mix fast. And it throws the vibe off. I wouldn't keep them up. In the NERD world, it's those drums are banging up front.
Yes. You know, like this fine dance of like finding the balance of like, what would work. So you kind of knew that the drums were going to be, because they're producers for that more than anything. So it's like, yes, this is like what they do. So it would sound like a rock band. It wouldn't sound like a producer, like hip hop projects, but it still would have that ingredient if it's there and present. So I kind of got it. You nailed it right on the.
Yeah, and you learn quick with Pharrell and Chad. Like they are looking for unique and pushing the boundaries, you know, and they don't want to copy anything. They don't do that. They want to like make something that's unique, that's a piece of art, that, you know what I mean? It's not a copy thing. So when you get in those sessions, you're not going into them like, oh, I need to play like so-and-so or whatever. You're going into it going like, how do I paint on this song to make it very unique? You know what I mean? It's an interesting like way to approach it, but it's so much fun. It's so much. It's
I love about both of them too. It's like they're from Virginia. Virginia has a sound. They took from that sound and pushed the sound. It wasn't, let's just do what the sound is. It's like, no, let's push this forward and take another step and let us be, you know, what makes it take that next step. So it's like, that's what of your, you know, collaborations led to. So it must have been hear the record when you finally heard it and you're like, this is, what was that experience like when you first heard the mixed master version?
Dude, it's so funny, man. Like I was saying, I went back the other day and listened to a couple songs. I listened to Provider, and then it goes right into Tape You. And I was listening to it. I was like, wow. I don't think I understood it even as much as I, when it was, you know, when I first heard it.
Yes. Yes.
But I think now I hear it back and I've, you know, just with more, you know, older ears, I guess, you know, or more developed ears or whatever. But now I hear it back and God, like the other night I was like, I was just blown away by like where Pharrell and Chad and Shay were at that time in their vision. It blew me away. Like I was like, this is incredible. It's so different. It's so different. It's so unique and it's so good.
I have a philosophy on that too. It's like, when you're making the record and you're listening to it back and it's like not that much time, it's like you're right up to it. You know what I mean? It's like still picking it apart. You're like, oh, you're like enjoying it, but not as time goes on, it gives you this perspective to really enjoy it in a much larger capacity, because I do that with my own records. It's like, I forget the things that were on there. And then, you know, you, when it first comes out, you're like picking it apart. Like you're just super critical because like, oh, we could have done that better. Oh, we could have done it differently. Oh, we could have mastered this in a different way. We could have mixed this, whatever it is. But like when you have 10 years that have gone by and you listen to that same record, there's
it's fun.
You just like, you enjoy it and you have that perspective of like, wow, we did something. Mm-hmm. Well, like this is kind of awesome. So I love that you have that perspective, and it makes total sense. It makes total sense. The record came out and you were like, oh, that's cool. And you needed that distance to really enjoy it and embrace it like wholeheartedly.
Yeah. And Nikki, I want to ask you, okay, speaking of that on releasing, I want to ask your thoughts on this too. Do you feel there is a timing to put out a song too, whether it's the right or the wrong time, creative, like a creative timing?
Yes.
Like, absolutely. I've noticed that through the years, like when I'll finish something and if it gets too far out, you kind of start to, do you have that? Like cause you do a lot of recording.
Yes.
You've had a good place to put them out too with, you know, right? So, but that happened. Do you feel that same thing? Like you got it?
Absolutely. And it could be the sound of the style. It could be the topic. It could be vibe of the whole thing. It's like when you release it, and the timing of that is all like when you write it too. It's like when you write it, you don't have a choice, but when you release it, you have a choice. So it's like you see what's happening in the music world around you, and the big question is there room for this? Of course there is, but is this the time for this? That is another question, because it's like, and the perfect example is like when somebody releases a record, what single do you pick first? Like that's perfect analogy. It's like, oh, there's a timing of your singles, and the order of your singles are your songs for the record.
Yeah.
I think people should be embracing the song or the timing of the release of it with what's going on around it. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's a great thing though. It's like, I think the answer to your question is there's always room for it. And the more strategic you think about when you should release something is a good thing, because you're the tastemaker, and it's like
you're
the chef preparing something. And when you're making a record, you're basically preparing a 10-course meal. So it's like, and you release something is like when you see, okay, they've just finished their second course, give them the third course. So I think
yes,
so important. You may hear my Frenchie like begging to be.
That the Frenchie?
That's the Frenchie. He just likes.
Oh my God.
Passion. So, Brent, let's talk about this. So, Spy Mob hasn't recorded in 20 years.
Correct.
All of a sudden, you guys are on a text chain, which you've had, I'm sure, for a long time. Some of the guys have gotten, you know, like jobs in therapy, and like they're therapists now. They've kind of like put the music on hold a little bit. How did the conversation start? Let's make a song.
Yeah. Dude, so Nikki, it was like, okay, so we have this thread, we're just talking, and you know, kind of was like, oh, well, maybe we should try to record a song, you know. Somebody threw it on, I can't remember who. And I didn't know if John and Eric would. Like I knew in my head we could, because I knew we could use, like, you know, we could use Logic, we could share, because they're in Minneapolis, you know. So I was like, well, and I wanted to do it because I just, you know, we never like broke up, or like we just kind of, you know, life kind of went and people were starting to have kids and whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we still, like, you know, we still had a great relationship, you know. And it was just kind of like, let's try it. Let's see if we could have some fun and do a song. And then we did, like, once, I think it was Forever in Time might have been the first one, which is that really funky one on our record. And it was just like, wow, this is really good. And then after all these years, like, so Eric and John are now like full time. They, you know, years ago, they went back to school and got degrees to be counselors, family counselors. But before that, up until, you know, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years ago or something like that, Eric had a jingle company. So he had this jingle house called Egg Music. So he had been working, doing tons of production and, you know, being able to arrange, learning how to arrange quick and whatnot. His chops just got mad amazing, you know, so good. And I did the same thing in the last 20 years. I've been making, you know, I've been on how many albums with Pharrell and in the studio and other gigs. So yeah, we did one song and it was like, wow, this is awesome. And then another and another, and it's like, oh shit, let's try an album. And then we just got to this point where we're like, wow, this is like this. We feel like this is some of our best stuff we've ever done.
Well, let's play. What do you want to play first?
You could go with Another Night is the first single, the single we released. You could play Another Night.
All right, let's play that. Here's Another Night by Mob.
Okay.
Traffic in the distance, I can hear it in the night. Nothing else is moving, eyes adjusting to the light. I don't need another night at home, sitting staring at my nothing, and I'm all alone. Another night. My neighbor's planting flowers in a box, it's painted blue. I watch them from a window seat, there's not much else to do. When no one is around, rolling up the sidewalk, singing rhythms to the ground.
Thanks, Nikki.
Oh, good, man.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you.
It's crazy that any label would hear that. Yeah, I know this is a new record, but even hearing the sound and drop that, it's like that guy should be shot in the leg. It's like, it's that just feels good. It feels good. It sounds good. Now, I read in your bio that when you first talked about doing this reunion, the lead singer, John, I think is his name.
John, yep.
Like, these guys are crazy. And went to bed. He had sold his piano, like, nah. And then he woke up the next morning and saw this text chain, like, how serious you guys were. Went and bought a cheap piano. Like, did you ever think that it wasn't going to happen? Because he was like, nah, I'm not in it.
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't think it would. I thought this would be like, ah, nah, you guys. Like, you know, I just thought they're busy. I don't know. I just didn't. I knew I would, because I knew I was like, I would have to like, well, Eric, you know, there was the complexities of recording too, because we formed in 93, you know, so we're a band that like we sat in a rehearsal room, and John's the writer. John writes everything. You know, there's very little Spy Mob stuff that's out. That wasn't, I think there's a couple Eric songs, but very little. It's John, you know? So John, he's a very classic songwriter. He sits at his piano and he writes a basic, you know, a song, not basic meaning like piano and vocals. You know what I mean?
Maps it all out. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And so John would, a lot of times he'd come in and he might even just write out a chart for us back in the day. And, you know, we'd sit there and we'd put the song together. We would arrange it together as a band, you know? So right. That was a complexity that I had to kind of figure out, you know?
To not be in the room and just get a set.
We're not in the room together. Here's the other thing too. And, you know, how do we do drums? So that was the other thing. And I had to call Eric, and I'm like, Eric, I think for this one, I think we're going to have to just program them. I think they're going to have to be, yeah, I think cause, and listen, we would love like that. The thing we would love to do is get in the studio together and do it like we did our major label record, you know, but our major label record was like $300,000 or some, you know what I mean? Back in the day or something, you know, can't do that. Like, we're not even close to that. So there was these things we had to do, but I knew we could make them work. And I knew we wouldn't lose like what we are creative, like, you know what I mean? I knew we wouldn't bend our creative vision, you know? That this album, to make it, you know, it was Eric and I doing all the production, him in Minneapolis, me in LA, and we just have a Dropbox set up and, you know. Yeah, so Eric,
hear more. Well, let's play something else. I want to make sure we get songs. What do you want to play next?
Why don't you play Forever in Time?
All right, here's Forever in Time. Bye, Mom.
Yep.
I want you. You know it. Write a long letter and fold it. Then mail it. Forever and ever in time. We'll be right back.
smokes, dude. That song is burning, bro. Guitars,
thanks, Nikki. Thanks, Nikki.
Oh my God, that is funky as funk, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Dude, let me tell you, I'm going to give you the biggest compliment. My AC went out. It's 80 degrees in the house. We're getting a new one put in. That song is so good, it made me forget how hot it is in the house. So good. It's so funky. God, the pocket on that is crazy. Did you do the guitars? Was it just amp and guitar? Did you have any? Yeah, it's just.
Yeah, that one is. Yeah. So I'm usually amp guy. I'm totally an amp guy. It might be that one. Maybe that one I might have used because I was excited. You know, I pulled it up and I was really stoked and I wasn't quite getting the sound and I wanted the deluxe.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I tracked it DI and I think it's on this one. I used the Universal, the Dream. I think it's the Dream plugin or something like that. And it's tricky. It's a little trickier to get it to, I don't know. I use amps so much and there's just something about, for me, it's, you can just put like a great amp. It's just so easy, you know, like right. It's so easy. The plugins are, they sound great, but there's a little magic missing. I think that's what it is for me. It's the outboard
air, you know what I mean? So that's a big
something. There's, it's something, but you can kind of work that, you know, you can kind of stack. So I was able to stack that up. I got a few little tricks I'll use with a few plugs. It's kind of like 1% things, you know, like the Pultec always does a little something cool. An 1176 does something cool that we're used to hearing. I really love, Eric and I use the SSL channel strip a lot. And I think we use that. I think
it's just so funky, man. It just sounds, it sounds like you're going direct board. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So, but yeah, man, like mostly amps on this album for sure, though.
I want to play this last track, but before we do, I want to, where can people find Spy Mob? Where can they find you on all the platforms? Instagram, kind of, let's give that and then we'll play this last one out.
So right now we're going to release I think like five singles up until September, so we're going to kind of push them out quick. Right now we've only put out Another Night, so that was the first single and that's the only one that's come out.
So good.
But we got, it'll be on all DSPs. The full album will be on all DSPs in September 1. Okay. The singles will be coming out up until that point. But for right now, we have all of our catalog and this album on Bandcamp for sale. So one thing we did was we said, well, June 2nd is when we released the Another Night single to all the DSPs. But right. At the same time, we put the album on Bandcamp for sale. Because
cool.
We knew we'd have fans and stuff that wanted to hear the whole thing. And Bandcamp's great because it's not that, you keep your prices down and it supports the artist, which is, you're just so grateful for that. Like because people, I don't know, people can go and listen to it whenever in September, right? But like people just buy it and people will come and buy the whole catalog just to support. So,
Brent, I could do a 3-hour interview just on Al Pastor. Yeah. Stars. So we're gonna play this last song out. I want you to tell us what's the name of this last song. And
yes, and what's that?
We're gonna play it out. What's the last song?
Yeah, this one's It's Not the Only Way. I think that's the other one I sent you, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep. Right. It's Not the Only Way.
You are a gentleman amongst thieves in the world of music and life. And dude, I just think the world of you. We're gonna play this last song. What's the name of it? One more time.
It's Not the Only Way.
Perfect. Here, It's Not the Only Way by Spy Mob. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Brent, we'll see you guys next week. Peace, love, take care. Right. Here we go.
When dreams take hold, they lift you up. Off your feet. making plans for the day. See it through, forward passenger plane. No matter what you say, here's what I must convey. It's not the only
to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.